Welcome to the Minivate Gang podcast number 125, recorded June 3rd, 2011. I'm Tim Elliott, and as always, joined by Steve Borsch.
Howdy, Tim.
Graham Thickens.
Hello.
And Phil Wilson.
It's kind of weird having a different guy leading the cast. It's kind of fun. I got to tell you. Yeah.
Well, do you
feel sort of diminished in any way, Steve?
I am. I'm slumped down in my chair.
I hosted one other time, but Steve wasn't on.
That's right. So yeah. This is kind of weird. So you probably ought to explain why Tim is taking the lead. Tim, why are you taking the lead? He asks inquisitively.
Well, we thought that Steve might be somewhere on the road.
Yeah, I went on a week-long road trip. I had a Jones for a road trip and take my new camera. And so I went through, in fact, I added up last night, 2,270 miles in 6 days.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Went through Montana, down into Wyoming, Colorado, and then back up through Rapid City. And my intention was to stay 2 days in Yellowstone, but there were up to 18 inches of snow in Yellowstone. And I said, nah, I don't think I'm doing that.
So how many pictures did you take?
700.
How many good ones?
Three.
Five.
Yeah.
Are those three on Flickr yet?
No, I got to go. Well, I will. I'll go through a lot of the stuff won't matter to anyone but me, but I'll go through and I'll stick them up on Flickr.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Pictures of his junk on Twitter. Look for those soon.
Yeah. Well, the big revelation was, just real quick, is going through and, you know, following the Lewis and Clark Trail and where the Overland Stage went and all of these sort of Old West things that are put on all the historical markers. And all I could think about was not only how difficult it was to travel, you know, up rivers and across on the Oregon Trail on wagons, but they didn't have smartphones. Damn.
Yeah, how was the connectivity?
It blowed. AT&T was not great.
Yeah, even so that's like Metro PCS country, huh?
Yeah. Well, even with, here was what was really fascinating. Even with 5 bars of 3G signal in a town, there was still no data connection. So I could make voice calls, but I literally could not use the data connection. And this happened in about half a dozen towns. It's just bizarre.
Those cowboys just aren't into it, I guess, you know?
No.
The smartphones or, yeah, whatever. Did you actually get into Yellowstone or did you skip it because of the snow?
No, I skipped it because I didn't have winter gear and B, I'm driving my Prius. So the last thing I had to do was drive up in the mountains with no chains. It was ugly up there. And the rivers literally every river and stream is flooding. It's just incredible.
So. I heard they opened up the ski resorts in Aspen, you know, like on Memorial Day weekend. They reopened them.
Unbelievable.
So I know it got snow out there. Yeah. Wow.
I did drive.
So what was the highlight?
I think the highlight was driving through areas that were inland seas, you know, millions of years ago, and just the incredible expanse and seeing all the historical aspects to it. And, you know, I think the big highlight was Little Bighorn National Monument, where Custer had his last stand, because I'd always read about it and seen films and all that. I never really had a context for what the battlefield was like, and to actually stand there and understand how the flow happened of the battle really gave it a new perspective. So that was, I thought that was really fascinating.
Is that in South Dakota?
No, it's in Wyoming.
Oh, it's, yeah. Okay.
No, wait. No, is it Montana?
It's close.
No, it's Wyoming. No, it's Montana. God, wait a minute.
It's just across from South Dakota, probably.
Yeah. Oh, God, I'm confused now. Anyway, yeah, it's over there somewhere in the West.
Yeah. Notice all of us jumping to his aid saying, well, no, here's where it is. We have no idea. Florida.
Gotta Google
wasn't
that.
It Florida?
Oh, man.
Oh, hopefully our kids won't hear us with this podcast. It's like, oh, Dad, you don't know where Little Bighorn is? No, son, I don't.
They didn't teach that to us in California, the history class at school. Nothing about that kind of stuff. Yeah, this kind of Civil War was sort of like, you know, there's, you know, North and South, blah, blah, blah. There was not anything on the Indian Wars at all. We learned a lot about, you know, the Spanish colonizing California and Mexico and all that stuff, though. So,
really?
Huh. Yeah. Yeah. I imagine that you'd learn a lot about, you know, that sort of local history here or up in Montana or South Dakota.
Well, here's the other thing that did strike me. You know, you asked me about connectivity. Is in Yellowstone, there's several apps actually that give you audio tours of Yellowstone. And they use GPS so you know where your location is and so on. But I was amazed by how lame the travel apps are. You know, I was expecting, because I looked at a lot of them. I was expecting, you know, augmented reality things where I'd show up at some monument by a dinosaur dig and it would show, you know, overlays of people digging and so forth. None of that. Nothing.
It's in Montana, by the way, guys.
Well, that's good.
Thank goodness for Wikipedia. Phil. Yes.
just wanted to throw that out to you guys.
All right.
I'm also on the site, by the way, Steve, and it says that the Little Bighorn Battlefield collections are temporarily closed for research. So you just saw the battlefield. You weren't able to see any of the collections?
No, I was in there.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe they closed right after you left because you stole something.
That could be. That could be. Yeah.
All right. Well, we've got a pretty packed show today, so we should get started with it, as enjoyable as all this discussion is.
Fine. Be that way.
So Phil was sort of executive producer this week and insisted on two guests, not one, but two guests today.
Because I am a guest fiend.
So the first one we'll bring right on here in a minute. It's a blogger and curator, Patrick Roan, who probably most people know from his Minimal Mac blog, but he's just... wrote a new book that we're going to talk about, Keeping It Straight. So I guess let me try to connect Patrick up here right now.
And Patrick is based in St. Paul, I understand.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm surprised you don't know him, Graham.
I he kind of looks familiar, but I don't think I've ever met him. But I just connected with him on LinkedIn to solve that issue and make sure we're connected.
Patrick.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Tim and Graham, Steve and Phil.
Howdy. How you doing, Patrick?
All right. Hello. How is everyone?
Good. We're doing well. So we just wanted to get you on and talk about your new book, Keeping It Straight. Yeah. It sort of took me by surprise. I've been a Minimal Mac reader since the beginning. And all of a sudden, everyone's talking about this book. And so I had to go to Lulu and pick it up. And I've just started it.
All right.
Not all the way through it yet, but it's an interesting collection. So kind of tell us about how you got to write a book based upon some of your blogging.
Well, I really was looking one day through some posts that I had done really on my main, my personal site, patrickroan.com, and started to realize that there were some themes there that kind of didn't really, because blogs are time-based and I write about such a wealth of subjects, oftentimes you can't see the threads between pieces until it dawns on you by looking at two, one right after the other, and you go, oh, wow, these things really belong next to each other and not separated by this length of time and several other posts. And so that led me on a journey of really going through all of my writing over the past 8 years and really kind of pick up on a few common themes and threads.
So let's back up a little bit. Maybe some listeners aren't aware of kind of the where you write. So you have a number of different blogs. I think they're all on Tumblr, right?
No, that's not correct. I have a number of them on Tumblr, but my personal site is actually WordPress based, self-hosted on WordPress.
Okay, so where do you write, and kind of where do you decide what goes where?
Well, I view myself kind of with two roles. First of all, as a writer, that's what I am. Is what I do. But the other who I am and what I do is that of a curator. I tend to reserve my writing, my long form writing, and this is obviously not universally true, but the things that are on a variety of different topics and subjects, I generally reserve for my personal site, while all of my other sites are really curation as well as writing commentary surrounding a particular theme. So we have Minimal Mac, which really discusses primarily minimalist computing practices as it prescribes to the Macintosh, but also talks about these things in general. Practical Opacity, which is you know, kind of like the Minimal Mac equivalent of social media and how to deal with the growing level of input and information and communication we have throwing at us in a manner that is sane and sensible and sustainable. And those are really my my two main ones. I've got my two other main ones. I've got the random posts.
So how did you decide which posts went in the book, and then how did you kind of curate the book, if you will?
Pretty much I kind of decided on some common themes. Those themes were really centered around living a simple, more focused life, you know, with mindfulness and with clarity. The other was kind of productivity, because I think those two go hand in hand. That if you look for ways to reduce friction and streamline, that you naturally end up in a place of focus and clarity. And then a little bit about just some of the lessons that I have learned along the way that have led me down this path and support where I'm coming at these ideas from. And Patrick, so, go ahead,
Patrick. It's Phil. I'm sorry. But why don't you tell us a little bit? Can you give us sort of one of the high points? As again, you talked about the lessons you learned. What one lesson, as we try to keep it straight, and there's a lot to keep straight. What big lesson have you learned that you'd like to highlight?
Wow. You know, and I'm still learning, right? And you know, the big lesson that I've learned is that there's always something to learn, right? That there really are, there's no such thing as a limit or an envelope to what we can learn about ourselves. Oftentimes, we don't take the time to stop and introspect. In fact, oftentimes we are derided for doing so. You know, we have internal dialogues that tell us that we're wasting time, or that we should be doing things that are more important, that, you know, that it's somewhat egotistic or somewhat self-centered, and that these things aren't okay. And I guess the biggest lessons I've learned that I couldn't do what I do. I couldn't write what I write. I couldn't live the life I live without taking regular time to step back and to examine all of what I'm taking in, and to figure out what it means to me, and how to apply the stuff that has meaning and has benefit and improves me in a way that makes me a better citizen for the rest of the world.
So, Graham, did you have a question?
Yeah, well, I'm going to kind of switch the topics a bit, and I wanted to talk about blogging platforms. When I heard you say you've been on Tumblr, I'm curious to know how long and you've been using Tumblr and how you compare it to the other blogging platforms. I was struck this week by Steve Rubel, well-known Edelman PR blogger, saying he was ditching everything to go to Tumblr.
Yeah, I was surprised at that too.
And I I've been thinking about doing the same thing because TypePad is sort of old and decrepit, and I've been on it since 05, and I've been dying to do something simpler and, you know, simplify my blogging life, I hope. And so what would be your take on that, and what's your take on the Tumblr platform overall?
All right. Well, I've been using Tumblr for a while. Although Minimal Mac and Practical Opacity are only 2 and 1 year old, respectively, my site, The Random Post, therandompost.com, is my first Tumblr log, and that I've been doing for, I think, about 5 years, 4 or 5 years now, but pretty much shortly after Tumblr really was built.
I didn't realize it had been available that long.
Yeah, it has been. It's been around for a while. Tumblr has its benefits. It's a very specific platform for a very specific intersection of blogging, right? It's designed
like what?
Well, like curation. Okay. Basically, while, you know, certainly you could do a traditional weblog where you are you're simply, you know, a weblog has a very blogging and weblog has a very specific meaning in my mind. We've gotten away from that meaning, but originally it was guys like Kotke or Waxy.org, where basically they were simply cataloging the links that they had found interesting as they surfed the web, hence the term web log. All right. Blogging expanded beyond that. And while Tumblr can be used as a traditional web log, it can be used as what we've come to know as a blog, i.e. kind of what I term essays, short form essays. It's really best when you are curating a mixture of media. And even more so, it shines even more so when you're doing that around a theme. I think of other great Tumblr logs like Things Organized Neatly, right? Which for people with OCD, this is heaven, right? That's what it is. It is pictures of things organized neatly, period, right?
Yeah.
And it's that kind of curation that makes Tumblr shine, whereas other platforms tend to be more focused on what we've come to know as blogs or traditional weblogs. Tumblr brings this kind of new idea to it, as well as throws in some social elements as well.
Yep.
Well, I guess maybe the last question, Patrick, has to do with how do you make your choices? So obviously you make your money as an IT consultant. And obviously now with your book, the money's going to just fly in the door, right? But how do you make your choices on what you're going to write about and what you're going to focus on? I mean, obviously Minimal Mac is all about streamlining and making it optimized and efficient, with respect to your computing life and how the Mac fits into that. But how do you make your choices on what you're going to write about and the kinds of things you're going to focus on? Is it just what sort of experientially comes to you, or is there a direction? Or
yeah, it's a direction. I'm one of those people who is intensely curious, insatiably so, about a variety of different subjects. The things that I focus on and curate, especially like on Minimal Mac, like on Practical Opacity, these are things that I am subjects I'm intensely curious about, and that curiosity never ends. I never feel like, okay, I'm bored with this. And so what gets, what goes there is simply, you know, is a subject I just never stop being bored of. As far as my own personal site and what I write about, it could be anything. There are some common themes there. But it all comes from just things I think and conversations and observations and just about anything throughout my day that strikes me could possibly and potentially end up as something I've written there. The post is currently up on patrickroan.com about our natural state being the present. Came from me just observing my daughter whenever I would say, you know, hey, you know, I think we should, you know, I think maybe we should go to the park today. Okay. And boom, there she goes. She's like putting on her shoes, ready to go to the park. I'm like, no, sometime today, maybe later, not right now, we should go to the park. But, you know, but to our natural state is not thinking of things in the future, not thinking of the things in the past.
Right.
But to think of things as right now, today, here, present, is happening. And that we spend a lot of time growing out of that state only to find as we get to be more mature and get to be adults that we really need that state, right? Because it is that future and that potential and that this could happen or that could happen, which distracts us from getting real work done right here, right now.
Well, I really appreciate your time this morning, Patrick, and good luck on selling the book.
Oh, no problem. I should mention people can pick it up at keepingitstraightbook.com. It's available in paperback or digital download, EPUB, and PDF, as well as on the Amazon Kindle, which actually is my most popular edition. So just look it up on Amazon, Keeping It Straight, in the Kindle section. You'll find it. It's there.
Yeah, I picked up the EPUB on my Nook, and it's great.
Yeah, EPUB works great in iBooks, and I don't know when it will be in the iBook store because that's at Apple's discretion. So go to the Keeping a Straight Book website, get the EPUB version there, shoot it up to your iPad, and you can read it right there in iBooks as well.
Great.
Cool.
All right. Well, have a great one, Patrick.
All right. Thank you very much for having me on. All righty.
Well, that was great to have Patrick on. Should we bring on Don Ball or?
Should we talk about our guest next week and give a little hint?
Well, we could, but we could also talk about what went on this week. You know, there was quite a lot going on this week with all these IPOs and rumors of IPOs and possibilities of IPOs and all of this sort of thing. So does this signal, you know, if I take my usual jaded stance at IPOs and going public, does this signal the end of innovation for this round of social media? You know, with Facebook's IPO and LinkedIn's IPO and Pandora's IPO, and are they going to become the slaves to Wall Street now? And we're going to see just a whole lot of yuck and a lot of advertising.
Yeah, I think so. I think they're going to continue to find ways to monetize, but you know the biggest thing is we saw with MySpace how fast people can turn. And not that there's another Facebook out there or not that there's another LinkedIn out there. You know, both of them have critical mass and first mover advantage and all of that. But it's not necessarily the case that that somebody else can't come up or there can't be a new connection that everybody jumps on. So.
Well, and you know, Facebook's IPO is a ways off yet, but that's the big one that everybody's waiting for, I guess, or expecting in 2012. It a lot of people think it's bubble issues with all this stuff going on. The Groupon IPO values the company at $20 billion, but I see in the Tribune this morning a story saying that it the valuation after it goes public could be more like $30 billion potentially, and that they could raise up to $3 billion in that one. So it's
isn't that just insane?
Yeah, it is. And there are 8,000 employees, you were saying earlier, and I yeah. saw where half of them are salespeople. And did you see this? Did you see the link I tweeted earlier this morning that the most popular market, of course, is Chicago, because that's where there's base. Right. They're based. But did you see who number two is?
No.
The Twin Cities.
Oh, really?
People love that damn Groupon deal here in town, I guess.
Which is odd to me, you know, because quite frankly, my first interaction with Groupon, at least my last one, my first and last interaction with Groupon was just a friggin' nightmare. I could not get the thing to redeem to save my life. It was a matter of jumping through hoops, and it was. I mean, they were great as far as customer service and saying no problem, we'll refund your money, piece of cake. But it was like, oh my God, you know, my wife screaming up from the computer downstairs, this shouldn't be this hard.
Really? Yeah.
Well, see, you know, what's interesting is that my wife, daughter, and I, the three of us, not my son, but the three of us do Groupon a lot and do take advantage of it. It's just that it's not, you know, a lot of the deals, I mean, if I see one more massage come through, yeah. you know, $50 for only 10, you know, and I'm thinking, right. yeah, right. It's going to be Ralph, the, you know, the former garbage collector, he's in there kneading my neck, you know, and
well, the one I got on was a Domino's deal. It was a $10 pizza from Domino's. Oh. Listen, when you got teenage kids, it's like, yeah, well, get anywhere I can get cheap pizza, I'm on it. But it was, you know, first sign up for the Groupon, put in your credit card. Oh, well, that's not working on your credit card. Put in another credit card. Then, okay, here's your Groupon. Now you got to take the Groupon, go to the Domino's site, use this code to get in, and then you'll be issued a gift card. Then use that gift card to place your order online only. And it was like, oh my Lord.
By that time, you got $100 worth of time into it.
Yeah, you know, that point in time, I'm thinking, yeah, I'm going for Chinese. This is no.
Well, but here's what I think that could be pretty interesting. For quite a while, my wife and I have been jumping on these American Express deals because we've got corporate cards for American Express, and these deals come through, and it'll be like they had one that was a Ford Focus for $10,000, and they only had three of them. So, of course, you know, everybody in the country is after this car, and you got to keep clicking the button, you know, to try to be one of the people that gets in to get the deal. But then there are other deals where they'll have like 5,000 of them, and you can usually get one of those. You know, it'll be a microwave oven for half price, and which was cool when my daughter was going to college. And what I think about is organizations like Visa or American Express or others who could take what Groupon is doing and say, wait a minute, we've got everybody with these accounts, and why would we not drive deals? We've got merchant relationships and we've got the consumers. And why would I've been surprised, frankly, that the credit card companies haven't done that, have jumped in the middle.
Yeah, I think there's been a proliferation of these kinds of deal sites, and that's the game that Groupon actually recognized early on. I mean, they knew they were in it early, and they knew that there was a low threshold for other people to get into it. And all their financial advisors were telling them, okay, we got to go really fast here and get this thing to IPO before everybody on the planet is doing deal sites, you know. So yeah. Isn't even like the Star Tribune doing their own deals now? It seems like I get emails from them.
Yeah.
So it is proliferating.
Hey, is that Don Ball?
It is me.
So Don, Minneapolis now in Coco. So tell us about that.
Well, boy, it's a big story for us anyways. We were lucky enough to stumble onto the trading floor of the Minneapolis Grain Exchange. They approached us a while back, the grain exchange itself, they still own the building, and they approached us about if we would consider their space for our Minneapolis location. As we had already said, our intention was to open up in Minneapolis. So we took a look and we were like, wow, you know, it's the kind of space you walk into and your head immediately goes up and you scan the ceiling because it's like 35 feet up and it's all ornate. And we're like, oh my gosh, wouldn't this be amazing? So, you know, we stuck with it, and at first it seemed like it was kind of a lark, you know, but we kind of stuck with it and found out that you know, they were interested in more than just, you know, us being, you know, tenants, that they wanted somebody who would kind of honor the history of the space and bring it back to life in the right way, you know, because they could have had a hotel or a restaurant in there, but for a number of reasons that wouldn't work out because they'd probably have to gut the place. So we were like, yeah, we'll come in and actually we'll pay homage to, you know, the people who went before us. So in fact, we're actually going to build out a small 15-minute walking tour of the grain exchange. So it's going to be like a little museum vignettes in there as well for people who want to kind of see the history of the space.
So how many people will be able to be housed there once it's finished?
Yeah, I got that question today, and it's fuzzy only because if you know the way that we kind of work with space, it's one of those things where full capacity, which we hope we would never really hit, you know, might be at least on the co-working and the co-location side, about 80 people.
Wow.
The event side of the space, we have about 6,000 square feet of the 16,000 square foot floor is for events, and that right there, we think we're having to still finalize it with furniture and stuff, but we think that's going to be about 250 capacity there. And then we have two meeting rooms that are kind of external to the actual trading floor, and one of those is about 32 people capacity, and then the other one I think is about 25. Yeah, so all in all, kind of the space will support a lot of activity and quite a bit of simultaneous activity. And that was kind of our hope, was that we could kind of have this three-ring circus that would allow us to kind of, I was explaining to a reporter this morning, I said that we realized right away when we opened up the St. Paul location that we were never going to feed our families and put our kids through school on the backs of freelancers. And we said, so there's got to be other things, you know, other revenue sources that make the whole thing work. And that's when we said, okay, there's, you know, a really nice event space would be worth some money for people to have their fundraisers and their corporate galas and things like that, and wedding receptions even. And then a good meeting space would be nice if there was really good meeting environments, because your alternative is the hotel, and that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
And we thought there's something inherently cool and creative about a space where entrepreneurs hang out that we could just really see a lot of bigger organizations wanting to tap into that energy when they do want to go off site.
So question, you know, that photo of the trading floor,
mm-hmm.
What's going to happen to all those awesome wood desks?
Yeah. Aren't they great? So I'll tell you, but first real quick backstory, the point of those tables, they were always on the far end of the space where there's a lot of natural light, but there actually used to be overhead, skylights, and the whole point of those was they would take all the grain that was for sale, and they would put it in these kind of metal pans, and so the tables would be stacked with these metal pans, and each pan represented a boxcar sitting on a siding somewhere that was, you know, available for sale, and those tables also have really deep drawers, and that's where the cash went after a transaction was made, because it was all a cash business. And so those tables, there's 20 of them, we're keeping 10 of them in the space. And so they'll be available for, you know, for people who want to have like standing meetings or just, we're imagining a couple scenarios. And then when there's an event, we'll kind of clear them off to the side and then fill the space with chairs and tables and stuff. But the other 10, I believe the Grain Exchange is going to keep, and who knows what they'll do with them.
Oh, that's cool.
But they even predate the building. They're from the previous Grain Exchange, which is kind of,
wow. So
they're pretty old.
I think you got. I think you got Steve all worked up. You know, when you start talking history, he gets going.
I love this stuff.
He loves this stuff.
Well, you know what? You know, because have you? You know, I'm sure you've seen Lost Twin Cities on PBS or seen the book. If you haven't, go to Barnes and Noble and grab one.
It makes me weep when I read that book.
Oh, I know. But when you think about all the spaces that have gone away, the spaces that had depth and texture, like this one. You know, thank God somebody had the vision and the foresight to be willing to make this deal come together. And that's you guys. I'm assuming the city of Minneapolis, Project Skyway, and who else was involved in sort of crafting the vision of this?
Well, you know, I think you named all the parties. You know, we were looking for space, and Project Skyway was looking for space. And just coincidentally, we both met with the mayor's office on one day after the next. And so they said, you know, you two should be really be talking because you're both looking for the same thing. And so we said, yeah, well, we know these guys. I mean, we're friendly and everything, but it just never occurred to us to really band together. So then we struck a deal. And we said, okay, let's do this. You know, we'll host you guys while you do your accelerator work. And that kind of gives us enough critical mass where we can, you know, take a look at some more serious spaces. So it was great. You know, it was kind of, as the mayor said, it's rare to get two entrepreneurial groups to work together.
Well, and the mayor certainly understands the entrepreneurial environment, having been an internet consultant himself back in the 90s.
Right.
So, Don Graham, yeah. Tell us about the parking situation. You mentioned to me a couple of weeks ago that there was something going on with a ramp or something.
Yeah, we were trying to actually that didn't work out exactly as we had hoped. The city was helping us try to figure out if there was a way to get. You know, kind of price advantage parking in the adjacent lot, which is it's just on the same block. It's the Hoff ramp. That didn't quite work out. But we do have a fund that we've put together that's going to let us provide, you know, discount parking for, and we're going to be really clear that it's for entrepreneurs. Yep. It's for the folks who, you know, just really rightfully shouldn't be, if Minneapolis wants them in their midst, you know, working on new ideas, they can't afford to be paying, you know, what lawyers pay for parking.
And so, those damn lawyers.
Yeah, exactly. So we're still, like everything else, we're still ironing out the details, like where can we get a good deal? You know, we're thinking it's instead of one of the adjacent lots or ramps, we're thinking the entrepreneurs are tough enough. They wouldn't mind a surface lot that's two blocks away if the price is right. So I think that's where kind of where we're going to focus our attention. But, well, you know, the transportation picture's got a few pieces because I believe we're going to be able to swing something with kind of advantage pricing on mass transit, you know, sort of light rail that's a block away. And then also we're looking at having a nice ride rack brought down to the sidewalk and then getting a couple hour cars.
There you go.
Oh, fun.
Oh, hey, wait a minute here. One word, Don. Think about this. Heliport.
Yeah.
Yeah. Steve could bring his flying car in there.
Right.
That's great for you, you know, helicoptering in from, you know, from
Lakeville, yeah.
Right, you're Lakeville, yeah.
Lakeville,
yeah. Minivate's world headquarters.
That's exactly right. The epicenter of the interactive universe.
So Don, as you get the Minneapolis space ready, you're also doing another UnSummit on the 18th. Talk to us about that.
Oh, it's I think it's the best one yet, but that might be that's just my taste. You know, I'm not sure if everybody else will agree, but I had been pushing for that event to become kind of less of a marketing, you know, pure marketing focus and more of if we were going to, you know, if the premise of it is supposed to be kind of tech plus community plus marketing. And I thought the marketing had been taking over. So we said, let's put a theme out there that kind of funnels people's activity. And the idea is about coming together, the idea of like building communities or sustaining communities. And so we've got a lot of really good ideas for that. It's going to be held here in St. Paul, at St. Paul COCO, but I'm really pleased with the quality of the ideas this time around. And some are downright subversive, including my own.
What? So in what way subversive?
Well, you know what it is? So my complaint all along with our kind of social media culture is that there seemed to be too much kind of empty boosterism where it's just like, yeah, social media, rah, rah, let's use it to, you know, my classic line is let's go use it to sell Cheerios. And I'm like, you know, if it's really as revolutionary of a technology as everybody claims, and if it's really changing the world, then why are we being so small and focusing on just small little consumer marketing applications? I mean, if you know, you only have to take a look at the Arab Spring and you go, oh, this is a technology that can change entire power structures around the world. Can we talk about that kind of stuff, please? You know, about the full impact of it and not these little, I feel like we're just too ready. We want to play in the margins and we don't really want to do anything terribly noteworthy. So I think that if you look at some of the suggested sessions that are coming in, they're a little more weighty than I think they've been in the past. And so I'm personally really pleased by that.
Where is there a tentative list of sessions posted?
I'm on the Unsummit site right now,
and I'm not seeing it, man.
Yeah, you have to go to that first post that Michael threw up there, and it's in the comments. So it's really, really
it's in the comments.
We're making people work for it, I guess you could say.
That's the kind of guy you are.
Wow, so he hasn't heard about a wiki?
Yeah. You know, Michael, he's just, yeah.
Boo.
Blog comments is a wiki, yikes.
Yikes. Yeah. Very nice. So the date on that?
Oh, I believe it's the 18th, June 18th.
And the price on that?
Free.
Free? The event.
That might be the most subversive part right there.
I love that. I love that.
Very cool. You know, you got a lot going on, brother.
Yeah.
There is a lot. Thanks.
Go ahead, Steve. You were going to say something?
Well, all I was going to say was that it's just the stuff that you're involved in, Don, is just really interesting. You know, there isn't anything specific that I can point to, but I mean, you're thinking a lot of big thoughts, and you're especially the whole co-working space. But then, you know, the Unsummit and the kinds of things that you're really, you really think it should drive toward, you know, the big thoughts, the big ideas. I really like that.
Oh, well, thanks for saying so. I mean, Steve, I'm just a malcontent is what it is. many years ago, too many years ago, I had a fifth grade teacher, who saw that I was stirring up some trouble in the back of the room, and he said, "Hey, Ball." I go, "What?" He goes, "I know what you are." He goes, "You're an instigator." I had to go look up the word, but it absolutely has borne out. My fifth grade English teacher nailed it.
Wow.
There you go.
Yeah, Cole.
That's you. So,
police, right?
You're an instigator. Hey, that's right. You.
Well, thanks, Don, for coming on. It's a lot of exciting stuff.
Oh, hey, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it, and also that you're putting up with my technological malfeasance.
It's kind of like talking to somebody at Coco. You know, you get that little echo going on in the background. It's kind of nice.
We'll do a session at Unsummit on personal technology use.
There you go.
I'll be your first victim.
All right, man.
Thanks, Don.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Have a good one. Bye.
Yeah, take care.
All right.
So even though through the magic of editing, this podcast will actually seem pretty smooth. We've had some challenges, and Graham had to drop off to get back to work. But let's kind of wrap on one story, sort of teasing next week, which is it also gets our Apple content in, much to
yes, our required Apple content,
much to Phil's.
He loves that.
Dismay. But Monday, WWDC, another Steve Jobs keynote. And this time they've pre-announced what they're going to announce, though. So that's kind of crazy.
So we're going to talk iCloud.
So what's interesting is that it looks like it's a convergence between OS X Lion and iOS 5.
Yep.
Plus this, whatever iCloud is, which appears to be some sort of cloud-based service. So it looks like maybe Steve is reinventing personal computing another time.
Well, with Amazon, you know, doing their cloud music service and Google announcing their music service, the one thing that stands out most about the iCloud announcement is that Steve has already struck deals with all the major record labels. So all the music is now going to be able to be purchased and bought through the iCloud. And what's really nice about this iCloud, from what I understand, is that instead, if you've got a copy of a song that may be a little less quality in your iTunes library, it doesn't necessarily upload that to the cloud. It replaces it with a good quality version that's already resident in the iCloud. So this is a very cool system, and I'm looking forward to it. It just should be a lot of fun.
Well, I'm looking forward to OS X Lion, because to your point, Tim, about the convergence of iOS and macOS, there's buried gestures that developers have found where you can actually use the trackpad on your MacBook to flip through as though you were doing it with your, you know, pinch and zoom on photos, just like you were using an iPad or an iPhone. And there will truly be a connection between the two. And it's just a matter of how long it's going to take before there will be sort of a merged OS. I'm just hoping that they don't leave pros out in the cold, that people that are really hardcore and use, you know, like I do, like, my God, I look at all the apps that I use every day. I don't want to lose these apps. I don't want to lose the capability of being able to really manipulate media and do editing. I don't think they possibly could, but
no, you never. There's still a place for trucks.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. That's a good analogy.
Well, and Steve at the D8 last year.
Yeah,
he did kind of make that distinction. So I think there always will be a pro business for the Mac, and then there's this consumer business, which probably will get a lot more attention and drive more revenue. But you know, they're kind of their roots are in trucks, and they'll continue to stay there, I think.
Yeah.
Or at least we can hope. So it'll be interesting to see what they do on Monday. And I guess next week's podcast, we might even have some folks reporting in from right from the floor, I hope.
Yes.
So that'll be fun.
We'll see.
Sounds good.
So anything else going on the calendar here? I think we've just kind of covered it, right? With Unsummit coming on the 18th. And anything else?
Coco is going to do tours of their facility down in Minneapolis on June 8th, 15th, 22nd, and 29th. I'll put a link in the show notes, but it's going to be from 1 to 5 in the afternoon that people, it's be like an open house. You can just drop in. So I'll stick something in there about that.
Great. And I think I'm going to do a little shopping on Groupon, Living Social, where else? Oh, Facebook, Google, you know, I got a lot of stuff to buy.
Phil,
Amazon Local, Phil, Amazon Local just launched.
Phil, do not get your toes done again.
I'm going to get a massage and get my toes done.
I think that Amazon thing actually might have some legs, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Oh, I can get my legs done too. Okay, great.
All right.
Clever. All right, you guys have a great week. We'll see you next week on the Bit of Eight Gang podcast.
All right. Take care.
So long.
I got home from work this evening. I didn't find nobody there. 2 times a fool, 3 times you let me go. One day I'm gonna get my head together. Till then I'm living on Highbrick Road. Well, it used to be so nice and warm when you was lying down here with me. Yeah, but it's just a distant memory. 2 times a fool, 3 times you let me go. One day I'm gonna get my head together. Till then I'm living on Highbrick Road. And now this vision I got, baby, is something you don't share. And the emptiness I'm feeling.